Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and today we've got Rosalie Ospa here, who wrote and directed and was the lead actor in The Hostess. The Hostess was one of the films that was an official selection at Film Invasion LA in 2020, and it's superb. It's super memorable. It's one of those films I'm sure anyone who saw it at that festival, we could talk about it at length because it's also kind of thought-provoking. And I'm honored to say it is in Discover Indie Film, the TV series, Season 4, Episode 6. And proud to say we've got Rosalie Ospa here.
Hi!
And we'll talk about a bunch of stuff after the fact. I'll name a bunch of websites and hashtags or whatever. And you can add yours too. But just to get us started, I know you as a writer, director, and actor, but when did it all begin? Did you have this interest even as a kid?
Well, I started off with an interest in theater. I watched a lot of musicals as a kid, and my parents love to tell these stories. My first production was my own version of Into the Woods, the puppet show, that I did the entire musical, all the voices.
In the living room?
In the living room for my family. I actually did it several times. I did it when I was like 4 after I'd first seen the musical. I did it again when I was like 7. Like, I kept doing it to the woods. So I started off with a big interest in musical theater. I wrote also, I liked writing stories, but I didn't really like put anything together. I didn't really like performing. I was really shy. And I started doing theater in middle school acting and, you know, fell in love with it. Did it through high school, went and, you know, majored in theater and,
What college did you go to?
I went to Illinois Wesleyan University.
I didn't even ask you where you grew up. What part?
Oh,
you grew up in Illinois?
I grew up in Ashland, Oregon.
Ashland, Oregon. That sounds really nice.
It is a great place. It's like a really artistic community, which is, just really supportive. We have a really big Shakespeare festival there, so I got to see a lot of theater. And they do stuff other than Shakespeare, too. They do, like, other plays and then also musicals every now and then. Just lots and lots of theater. Somewhere along the way, I became, like, really, really adamant that I didn't want to write.
Really? So you had been writing off and on, but you
like
decided
as a kid,
this is not for me.
I'd just been, like, writing stories when I was a kid. But, like, I don't know, like, sometime in high school, I was just, like, I had to take, like, a playwriting course, and they were having us write scenes, and I was, like, I don't want to do this. It was part of an acting class, actually. They had different sections of it, so we did playwriting, and then we did movement, and I hated the playwriting. I did not want to do it at all. In college, one of my professors tried to get me to take his playwriting course, and I was, like, Nope. So.
And was it the thing where they would say it would expand your acting if you wrote, like, just tried writing, or?
I think they were just like, hey, you should do this. And I'm teaching this course. You should come take this course. So I was just really, really opposed to it. And then, like, something just very dramatically flipped a couple years after I moved out here. I think I was mainly just unhappy with what I was reading.
And right. So you get your degree and you move out to LA. And a couple years later, after reading Garbage, reading Garbage inspired you to write, or?
Yeah. Well, I just there were definitely like things I wanted to say, and I was so used to just, like, interpreting. And, again, I felt very strongly about, like, no, I like to interpret this. I don't like to, like, make the statement and say it. I like to interpret what other people are saying. And just no one was saying what I wanted to say. Right. And, or what I wanted to interpret. So I was like, okay.
And did it shift? Because especially the interpretation is very stage oriented, right? Like, mm-hmm. like the stage actors get to put a lot more in, I think, than when you're acting for camera.
Right. And there, you know, a lot of the, you know, when I was doing scene work in college and monologues, you read the whole play. You get the whole context. And auditioning for film, there's, like, nothing. You get basically nothing.
And you get, it's like, 2 pages, maybe 4 or 5.
Yeah. And, like, coming from a theater background, I'm used to, like, starting at .0 and moving and being involved every step of the way. I mean, you know, you're seeing the set get built. You're going in for, you know, costume fittings. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Especially, like, in college. Like, we were required to either help build the set or help do costumes. So you're part of this entire process in creating this whole world and this whole story. You're watching other people rehearse scenes that even if you're not in them. And it's just so, like, the process is, like, inherently immersive. And I missed that. I missed that so much about film. Like, going to film a short film, it's, like, 2 days. And, like, sometimes you haven't met the other actor before.
Yeah, they skip the rehearsal period.
Yeah, and I missed that. I wanted to be part of creating a story from, like, .0 to the finish. Product. So that's, like, writing really filled that void, and now I love it so much.
Wait, so you started writing, and now you just write all the time?
I just write all the time.
Almost like a daily routine, or?
Not a daily routine. Yeah, I mean, I write whenever I have time, and sometimes that's like, oh, I have 30 minutes and I'm just fixing some notes that I have on this script. And then sometimes it's, I sit in a coffee shop for 5 hours and lose track of time because I'm just going. Yeah. So it changes.
Yeah, because real life is real life too, and you have to work it in. But good for you for keeping it part of your life.
Yeah, I don't usually write, like, just for the sake of writing. Like, it's, I get an idea and I try not to force it in, like, just bits and pieces. So it just, and I think that keeps me really excited about it.
And is it always screenwriting, or do you do essays and things?
It's screenwriting.
Yeah. Fair enough. It should be.
Yeah. I mean, I should write essays. I have so many opinions about stuff. Maybe if I wrote it down, it would be better.
Yeah, better than social media.
Yeah. I mean, I have done that, where it's like Facebook post and it's an essay.
Yeah, yeah. I used to until I realized no one cares.
No one cares.
No one cares. But people care about your scripts.
Yeah, that's better.
So, was The Hostess the first script that you shot?
Oh, yes, the first one that I shot, not the first one I wrote.
Written many.
No.
I can tell by your head shake. Oh, no.
No, I haven't. I started off with a feature. It started off as a sketch. I wrote sketch comedy in college. I was part of a sketch comedy troupe.
Oh, very cool.
So I started off with just, like, this character I saw, and I was like, oh, this would be a fun sketch. And then as I started getting into it, I'm like, no, this is a short film. I started getting into it more, and I'm like, no, this is a feature, and I've never written anything before, so I guess we're just going to try this. Yeah, and then I wrote The Hostess. But it was my first one, that I've written and shot.
Right. So it's what you came out here. You came out here, and it was inspired by true events, I recall.
It was inspired by true events.
And
yeah.
And so you had that experience, and then you wrote. How soon after the experience did you write it?
Oh, like 2 years. I honestly forgot about it, and I can't remember why it, like, randomly came to mind. One day when I was driving, and I was like, that's a really, and I remember, like, I thought about sort of that moment I had with a coworker, and I think I talked about this in the Q&A. It was all of 10 seconds. So I really analyzed it, obviously. I turned it into 10 seconds into 8 minutes. But that, like, interaction stuck with me, but I didn't think about the actual, like, phone call very, like, I didn't think about it for 2 years, and I was like, that's a weird thing. Now, obviously, after, like, the Me Too movement started, I realized, like, oh, that's not a weird thing. People do that, like, frequently. I still think it's weird, but it's more common than I thought at the time.
We live in this boat much. Now. We've learned so much about humankind and... Thanks to the internet and social media and stuff. Yeah, stuff that, if it's 0.01% of the population does it, that's like tens of thousands of people.
Yeah.
So it's pretty sobering. But very interesting to me that it was the coworker's reaction, the way you were treated by somebody else afterwards, did stick much more even than the rude, traumatic person event.
Yeah.
Which tells you something about how we treat each other in society. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if you're against, tell me your opinion on spoilers. Do you want to just do spoilers?
Let's just do spoilers.
Let's do spoilers.
Let's
because
do it.
People should, I shouldn't say this, but I'm a little bummed that Amazon makes us charge now for the show. It had been free for two years, and now they, too many people were watching. Turns out when you succeed, you get punished. but we'll see. Yeah, but people should absolutely go to Discover Indie Film on Amazon Prime and watch The Hostess, and then listen to the rest of this, because now we're going to spoil the hell out of it. But you want to start off the spoiling?
Oh, sure. So it's about a hostess who gets a call from someone supposedly trying to make a reservation, but he's actually... Jacking off during this.
He wanted to hear a female voice, and he's assaulting
someone at work. Any female voice.
Yeah.
So she goes downstairs, upset, and basically just wants some validation.
Yeah.
And a little bit of sympathy for what just happened. And her coworker, she goes into the bathroom with her coworker, and her coworker... It doesn't really know how to respond to this, so she tries to just kind of, like, brush it away. Like, she's uncomfortable talking about it. She doesn't know what to say, so she's brushing it away, which has the opposite effect on the hostess, Margot, because that just makes her more upset. She doesn't understand why this person isn't responding in a more, like, empathetic way.
And she's expressing her emotions, and when someone's being dismissive... It makes your emotions stronger.
Yes.
It doesn't make you say, oh, that's right, I shouldn't feel violated. And by the way,
right.
To compliment your screenwriting instincts, the fact that the film starts in the bathroom, you don't bother with her up on the phone upstairs. I don't know if you would have done that budgetarily or thematically, it just makes sense to start. You start on her crying.
Mm-hmm.
Which is such a great way to start. I mean,
thanks.
Sadness is real, you know, so... Right away, you start us on Margot crying, and then you see the expression on the other woman's face, and talk about it's such a subtle conflict right off the bat, and all the different ways that she dismisses. One of the ones you gave me a thought when I rewatched it this morning, because there's so much to this film, and there's so much to how we treat trauma.
Yeah,
and. She actually does like trauma competition. Like, well, at least nothing happened to you in person.
Yeah.
Like, at least he was just on the phone. And it's like, my God, just because other people are traumatized in much more horrible physical ways, that doesn't mean that she shouldn't get to express her trauma of someone just sexually violating her on the phone.
Right.
And it's just trauma competition is, ew.
Yeah.
I think your film hopefully will provide a service because, like, I would like to think if I ever did diminish people's trauma, I'll be better about it. Because you have shown me just what, you know, even though, like, you've said, like, people completely understand the waitress's point of view. That she's like, it's dinner rush. There's an income upstairs. You just heard a guy jack off, like, big deal, can I leave, please?
Yeah.
You know? And it's easy to understand her point of view, but...
Yeah, and I don't think... I mean, I didn't... When I was writing her, I didn't see her as, like, you know, bad-intentioned person.
No, I mean, even, like...
Even that line, like you said, at least, you know, he didn't, you know, violate your body. That can come from a good place. Or a place that's at least not intending to be mean or dismissive.
Yeah, it is.
It's, right? It's like, okay, well, look on the bright side here.
Yes.
But that's, yeah, that's not what... She wanted, needed.
In your mind, when you were writing, did you see the waitress as sort of a stand-in for society? Or, because I totally macro. I go macro with it in this film. Because it is. I mean, good Lord, I'm blanking on the names. But when Brett Kavanaugh, when the woman testified against Brett Kavanaugh, and a good portion of the country was like, all he did was hold her down for a while. But he scared the shit out of a young girl, and she, in that moment, she experienced the opposite of what he did. I don't know, just...
Yeah.
Society dismissing people who are traumatized because it wasn't enough trauma for us to acknowledge.
Right.
That's like a big thing.
It's weird. I don't know. I think it's weird. And then I think people get so used to that being said by society... that they start to do it to themselves, you know?
Right. That could happen.
It's like, and that's, I don't know. That's something I kind of like about Margot is that she didn't just go, oh my God, you're right. This is a big deal. I'm just overreacting. Like, she was like, excuse me. Hey, are you listening to me?
By the way, I get your sketch background now because there is that funny moment when the next waitress comes in and she starts up again. And this waitress is even a little harsher, maybe?
Yeah.
A little more blunt?
Yeah.
But it's also kind of funny.
It is. Yeah, it should be funny.
Yeah.
You know, the screening I got to go to, the one I was telling you about, the Chinese theater before the pandemic, what was... interesting about the Q&A after that, and I loved that this was the reaction. I loved it so much. This one guy said, like, I really wanted to laugh, but I was, like, so uncomfortable, and I wasn't sure if I should. And I'm like, that's awesome. Like, that is possibly the best response I could have asked for.
There are funny moments, for sure. But
that's my favorite thing, is when you're, like, uncomfortable and you're like, I don't know why I laughed at that. It's not actually funny, but for some reason I laughed at that. Because then you walk away like thinking about it. If you just laugh because it's a comedy and it's physical comedy or whatever, like, you know why you laughed.
For sure.
But I hope that more people have that response.
Yeah, well, and you wrote something with so many levels. And then by the way, the direction is great.
Oh, thank you.
I just love your inserts. I love when you switch from the side shots using the mirror to put the two women side by side. I just think it strikes me as very thoughtful directing.
Thank you. Yeah, the indirectness of the mirror was something I was really excited about playing with.
Yeah, and because we're focusing on you as a writer, I want to throw that in. And as an actor, too, and your acting is, you know...
Thanks.
Excellent. Your acting is excellent in this. I mean, Margot doesn't let up.
No.
And I love that you see her as Margot. I like that it's, you know, it's a character.
Yeah. She's very much... very much a slightly bigger than life character.
Yeah. But I bet at the Chinese, I bet there could have... There was a... Did people just start debating the film? Did they?
They had a limit on the Q&A.
Yeah.
There was like, I think like a 5 minute. Because they had like a bunch of us up there.
That's what they do.
So it was quick. We didn't get much debate in.
You didn't get to experience it, but at Film Invasion Los Angeles, we do like, you know, one filmmaker at a time with their team, whoever they want from their film up there with them.
That's awesome.
And you know, we go like 10, 15 minutes, because that's kind of the whole point, I think, of a film festival, is to actually watch it together and then discuss it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the hostess would have been a good discussion.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I'm glad I at least got to see, like, some responses to the film. Yeah. It's informative as, like, a first-time director and writer. I didn't know if things would land. I just didn't have that experience to know how my writing would come across. So it was really just a roll of the dice with this. I'm like, I think this moment is funny. Like, theoretically, if I think it's funny, like, at least one other person might think it's funny.
And in your theory, head, when you writing comp, did you have, like, some comedic intentions?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah.
So you were making fun of the moment.
In a bit.
The awkwardness of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I just, it had to be funny somehow. I don't know. I don't think I could have written as just serious.
It's so funny because obviously it does strike me as dramatic.
Yeah. I mean, it is, it's more on the dramatic side.
It is.
I think it's, I've noticed that I tend to write characters with, like, that have some of my least favorite qualities and characteristics of myself in them. And so, like, in a way, like, I just have to laugh at that somehow.
Right.
I don't know.
Which is very... That means your writing is personal and good, because when people are distant from their material, I think it shows.
Yeah.
So when you're taking part of yourself and amplifying it and having fun with it, that's good writing.
Oh, thanks.
That's good writing. I mean, it's not navel-gazing like Woody Allen always was. But, you know, that's like way too personal.
That's very...
And it got weird, too, but...
Yes.
Well, that's, you know, what's funny is when you were saying that you kind of intended it as comedy, I just, in my head, I changed from, like, maybe as a festival programmer, if it was in a block of funny shorts.
Yeah, I never...
Would it get more laughs? Because then people would have the context. Like, if you told people, watch this comedy, would people be laughing at her reaction and then the counter reaction? I bet it would actually be full of laughs. And then if it's in a block of serious films, I could see everyone saying, oh, this is a really... look at that poor young woman being dismissed.
Yeah. And I mean, the truth is, I never knew what to, like, submit it under. Like, some festivals, I'm like, okay, we're gonna do comedy this time. Okay, we're gonna do drama. If there was a dark comedy category, I'd do it under that. But a lot of them, I was just like, I don't know. I'm gonna just try this category and we'll see. But yeah, I think one of the most, like, thought-provoking films, like, in terms of what I experienced with other people watching it, was Silver Linings Playbook.
Yeah.
I thought that movie was so funny. And I watched it with a friend, and she was so upset. She cried through it. And I'm going like, what is happening? Why is she crying? And, like, she was, you know, she just had a different perspective and lens that she was seeing it through. And I thought, like, I mean, obviously I wasn't glad that she was, like, upset by it. I didn't intend, when I was gushing about the film and how funny it was and how much I loved it, like, my intention was not for her to be upset by it. I genuinely thought she would have a similar reaction. But it was just, it made me think about it more. And... Oh, I totally lost my train of thought.
What the viewer brings to a film, right, and to art in general is all the context. Because, yeah, I could name lots of films where, okay, I'm a cancer survivor, so obviously cancer movies hit me differently, right? Like, I actually don't like them to be so deadpan serious. I actually think you should have a little fun with the cancer.
Yep. And that's, 100%. That's how I am, too, when I want. And it's great because it's this kind of like, oh my God, I know exactly what you're talking about. Like, it's like talking to listening to a friend who, like, you can, like, relate to, and just relating to it feels good.
Yeah.
And sort of opens you up to see things in a funny way.
Yeah. Yeah, in this way, whether it's drama versus comedy or other interpretations, there is nothing more fascinating. Well, I'm sure there's lots of things more fascinating. But I'm fascinated by, like, we had some real avant-garde films in Film Invasion this year. And, you know, the filmmaker would just be like, oh, if that's what you saw, cool. I didn't put that there, but if that's what you saw, that's valid. And it is true, right? Your friend is absolutely valid that in Silver Linings Playbook, Bradley Cooper's character is mentally ill and damaged, and it's
right. And the whole family dynamic in that with, like, Robert De Niro, like, and.
But at the same time, there's a lot of humor in it.
Oh yeah,
there's a lot of humor in it, and of course, you could tell they went for laughs with that dance at the end.
Oh my God!
Because instead of, like, them being so good,
that was the ending to the dance. I didn't realize until I'd seen it several times. I think they were trying to do the dirty dancing lift, which just seems like the hardest lift in the world. Like, why would you even try that? I think that's what they were going for. And then she
wrapped around, like, her, like, legs went around his hips or his chest.
No, it was like his, like, face.
Yeah, yeah.
It was
so,
like,
she smothered his face. It was funny. It was funny. And they were both mentally ill, but it worked. Yeah, it was, but it was a love story, too. So what are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
It worked. It was fun.
It was a lot of stuff. There's a lot to feel in that.
As same with the hostess, actually. There is, though, because it is. That's a fascinating, you know, in a perfect world, there'd be film festivals where, like, you know, sometimes films get shown more than once.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be so much fun to, like, play with context.
Yeah.
Instead of just showing the same block twice. Like,
I do wonder,
blocks.
Like, what you said about, like, screening it with a comedy block and then the drama. That's a really interesting thought.
Yeah, like, we had some other films that took place in bathrooms that were silly and hilarious. It'd be funny to just have, like, a bathroom block.
A bathroom block, yes!
One of the funniest lines in The Host is when the waitress finally says to her, you know, I just came in to pee and you kind of grabbed me. She just finally admits, I had no intention. I'm just not qualified to be here. Can I go?
Yeah, yeah.
And then the next one says, I just came in to pee.
Yeah.
It's really very funny. See, it is funny. Now you've changed, because I admit, when I watched it this morning, I was thinking about all the ramifications and society dismissing trauma victims and the Me Too thing.
But it's true.
Because of Me Too, right? Like, a lot of people thought it was funny that we found out Louis C.K. whips it out and jacks off all the time backstage.
Yeah.
Because when you think about a guy that unattractive, thinking that women would want to watch.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny, but what they experienced was pretty awful.
Right.
Or for some it was awful. I imagine for some it was, they could shrug it off.
Yeah.
But everyone's experience is different.
Yeah.
And there's just way too much sexual assault.
There's so much. Yeah, it's crazy. This is sort of what I'm writing about in my feature film.
Is a serious? Because normally the next guide of our topic within the podcast is, so now that when we're done with the hostess, is what you're working on next.
We can talk about that, yeah, whenever you want to.
Well, it's up transition. To you. You mentioned, you're writing a feature now?
Yeah. And kind of the thing that inspired this was coming to the conclusion, like, over, you know, a bunch of years in my life, realizing how many men I knew who had committed sexual assault. People I trusted, cared about, people I thought were friends. And it creates this really, really interesting, cognitive dissonance.
In them or in you being their friend?
In me, especially, like, as being a sexual assault survivor. Mm-hmm. And then having this friend who you trusted and thought was, like, a good person. I mean, it doesn't mean they're all bad. No one is all bad and no one is all good. And that's where my feature film is trying to live in, like, a super-duper gray nuanced area.
Well, let me ask, because I'm dying to know, how did you come to know how many of these men had committed an assault? Like, they told you, like, casually, like, actually, yeah, I was at a concert and I grabbed a girl's breast and she didn't know, and then when she turned around, I pretended it wasn't me.
The thing is, most men who sexually assault women, it's someone they know. So if I was their friend, I knew
the girl. Through a mutual friend. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you hear about it.
Yeah. It's a really crazy place to live. And it's also something no one was talking about with the Me Too movement. And, you know, I think, like, my heart goes out so much to, like, Andrew Cuomo's daughters. And, you know, when he was doing all the press briefing last year, like, on a daily basis, he'd talk about his kids sometimes. And, you know, then all the allegations of sexual assault came out. I'm like, how much did his daughters feel about this? Where are they mentally? Where are they emotionally? How are they processing this? Like, does part of them believe the allegations? How difficult is that? Is it for them? Like, I can't even imagine.
Yeah, do they have the instinct just to defend him? Is that the first, you know, right. And different kids of the same dad will hear this and react differently.
Exactly. And it's like, I mean, I can't imagine it being like a family member that, oh my God, that'd be so hard. But the thing that I like point out about this, feature film is that I think the statistic is like 80% of women are sexually assaulted or sexually harassed. So that means that the percentage of men that sexually harass or sexually assault is way more than whatever we think it is. Like, yeah, obviously,
it could be 2/3.
Exactly.
It's not a 10% thing.
Right.
It's not an 80-20 where they're 80% are good and 20% are bad, but the 20% are bad. Make everyone look good.
Yeah.
Make everyone look bad.
I don't think we'll ever know, because who's going to, like, you know, women will admit to that in surveys and whatever, however they figure out these percentages. But, like.
Well, I mean, that's harassment. Like you said, I think one in 3 or 1 in 4 women are physically assaulted,
right,
in a sexual way in their life, and it's horrible because I know young men who think that it's overblown.
It's overblown.
They're not that, and I go, you don't understand. You're so. I'm actually talking about a family member, but and I'm like, you know, three of the first four women I had a real relationship with shared with me a date rape story.
Oh, Jesus.
You know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, you to this kid who's like a senior in high school, I'm like trying to explain, you're going to find out about this happening to people you know.
Yeah.
And God willing, it doesn't happen to your sister.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But.
Yeah. And it's, and like, I sometimes think about, like, okay, hypothetically, let's say that there is, like, whatever, like a sample of like 1,000 men, and they have the, you know, a survey or whatever to ask these questions. Do some of them even know that they've sexually harassed someone or sexually assaulted? Like, do they even realize? Right? So whatever statistic we have out there, it's just not accurate.
It's not accurate. And it can't even be. I don't know if it ever can be. Because right. I can say from people I know, who shall remain nameless, I know I have really close friends who are women who will have co-workers that I'm like, okay, you're actually crossing, like, what you guys are doing. Oh, well, the comments you're making towards each other with another coworker, if he turned around and spoke to someone else the way he's speaking to you, he could get fired.
Right.
But you guys are cool with it. You got like a whatever vibe you're feeling, yeah, whether it's a flirty one or just pure platonic friends.
Mm-hmm.
But, and so to that guy, yeah, it's the
okay
experience. Yeah.
Right. Like, yeah. It's, yeah, it's just, it, and,
like, he would never self-report that I harass.
Right. Right.
But exactly. He's commenting on someone, hey, your boobs look nice today. Boom, you've done it.
Right.
You kind of
yeah.
Have.
Yeah, it's, yeah, it's really, it's so interesting, and it is, it's really not black and white, and
no.
there's, and the fact is, like, we, as humans, can believe multiple completely conflicting things at the same time and just, like, exist in that area. And either we're aware of it or we're not, like, whichever. But, like, that exists and people aren't talking about it.
No, and so
either, like, it's one or the other. It is. It's very polarized right now.
Like everything, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, like, with my experience, that's not where I live. And no one's saying it. And why isn't anyone saying it? And I think it's important. And so I wrote about it!
Well, how has it affected you to be writing this? How have you... Are you struggling to with all the different... the million different ways you could explore the topic?
No, because I've had a lot of time to process it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, lots of time to process it, and...
And other power dynamics in the script? Because, of course, power dynamics affect harassment so much when it's
right.
Someone with power over another
Yeah,
person.
I mean, it's... Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, the story itself is, like, totally, completely fictional. It's about a lawyer. I'm obviously not a lawyer. Like, yeah, it's about workplace sexual harassment. This young attorney, after being assaulted at her first law firm that she worked at. This is spoilers, BT Dubs, well, but no one knows the name of this. This is
sure.
On my computer right now, and that's where it lives.
The rap in the beat, God willing, it gets made,
yes.
And then someone goes back and listens to this and is like,
right.
Holy crap, there was the germ.
The
germ of the seed.
But so she moves to this new firm because of that experience, and like this guy she had crush on in high school and just like really like, you know, like Mr. Popular, like that guy that everyone just loves, walks into the firm. They don't take his case, and so she goes to him and says, I'll take your case. She has no clue what it is, but just she knows him. She trusts him. She believes him. She wants to defend him. And, like, you know, through flashbacks, you realize, like, he was Mr. Popular. She was super nerdy. And he kind of, like, stood up for her a little bit sometimes. So it's this kind of, like, really strong desire to, like, protect this person and protect her memory of this person.
Right.
And protect also the reality in which she lives, where she's in so much denial about her own experience that she's fighting to create a reality, basically, where this doesn't happen by defending him.
So he's accused of assault.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it's dealing with you know, he was, you know, harassing his employees.
I love that you're approaching it from the legal angle too, because that's something that our society is forgetting, the everyone deserves a defense thing. Like, right, people get nominated for Supreme Court and people are like, oh, she might be a woman, but she defended this. She had this hope. You know, she defended a murderer. And it's like, we're supposed to.
You're supposed to. That's. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And, yeah, it is. It's very. It's really. It's such a complicated thing. And it's so unfortunate. And fortunate at the same time. You have to go into that situation. And, like, the character says this too. Like, you can't just accuse someone. You have to go in with proof. And it's so horrible for women. It's so horrible for women. But it would be equally horrible if it was the other way around, where you just go and you accuse someone of something, anything, shoplifting, whatever it is. And you don't have proof and they're found guilty, you know? It's so insanely complicated. And I feel like everyone is trying to just pick something and stick to it, and I understand. I wish I could. I wish I could. Yeah, I feel like people like will hate me when I talk about this.
Are we dancing around the thing that I assume we probably both kind of support it, but it is tricky, the believe all women thing that was going around a bit. Mm-hmm. It's like, I do. I don't think that there's women walking around saying, I'm going to upend my life.
Absolutely not. Yeah.
And make an accusation that I get a ton of blowback. But, you know, sometimes.
There's maybe a 1% of that.
I don't know, like, what percentage.
I can't imagine any woman, you know, doing that.
Yeah, choosing to, or, you know, to choosing the.
Wanting to, you know?
Yeah.
Most people just want to move on. They just want to move on with their lives.
Most do.
However that is, just move it on.
We have this sick societal thing where we're like, one accusation, two, okay, three, he's guilty.
Right.
And that is just the worst, I think.
Yeah, it's,
I don't know.
I don't know that there's any good solution. I don't know that there is. I hate to say that, but
we're imperfect beings in an imperfect world.
Exactly.
I mean, that's what you're dealing with in this script. You're dealing with, you're diving right into the gray area of.
So gray. And I legitimately, like, feel like, oh, I'm going to make someone so angry one of these days by, like, saying this. Luckily that hasn't happened yet. I feel like it's an unpopular opinion. But it's an opinion based solely 100% on experience. So I also feel that, like, how can I be blamed for my experience?
Well, if you...
Choices, right? By no choice of my own. Based on other people's choices.
If you do the same thing with the unnamed feature sexual harassment project. or name not given. As you did with Hostess, which is... People can see both sides presented. People identify with both characters. People, you know, if you actually do just as good a job, and I hope you do, then I would think you'd be safe from criticism. There'd obviously be, it's funny, I just naturally think of the film festival world, and like I've had gay filmmakers make a comedy that gay festivals despise because... It's not PC enough.
Right.
So, but I am personally a PC person, but I get it when people want to have fun, too. So
yeah.
I don't know what I'm saying, but I'm saying I could see your film being a hot button film already. It'd be...
I mean, I honestly hope it is. I hope it would be. Even if people hated me. If they hated my opinion. And they were like, that girl is awful. Contemplating this. Like, okay, that's fine. Like, I'm glad you feel strongly about something.
Just, you know, try to become a commentator. You can get rich being a commentator on one of the conservative networks. And there's a career path anywhere.
There's a career path somewhere.
Are you intending to do it? Is this like, are you seeing it as an indie thing?
Oh, yeah. 100%. Yeah.
So you're going to be the lawyer?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, I don't know. I just wrote her in my voice. So that's the intention. I mean, we'll see what happens, you know.
Excellent. Yeah. And in the meantime, you're just enjoying life, the world's reopening and...
World's reopening. It is nice to not wear a mask, but now we're wearing masks again. Yeah. Which is fine. It's not really... I bought like 30 masks like in March right before I got vaccinated. The timing was not great, but now I have tons of masks that I can play with, like different patterns.
I love my mask because I'm just, you know, a little 5% hypochondriac. So especially when like November comes around, even if there's no mandate anymore, I'm going to wear it at the market because I hate getting a cold.
Oh, same. Even colds like take me down for 2 weeks.
Yeah, me too.
And I have this fun mask today that's, like, it's super pretty and it's got, like, this heart. I think it's hands doing a heart. And it's, like, super pretty. You know, you can find cool masks.
Excellent. And the hostess played a couple virtual festivals after lockdown. You had a nice little run?
Yeah. We did the Lady Filmmakers Festival, which was nice to, once again, get to see lots of other films. Yeah, so that was good. And I think that was the only other virtual one, actually. It was just Film Invasion and Lady Filmmakers. But those are also the two that have really, like, championed the films into, like, streaming and being available for others to see, which is just, like, the best.
Feels a little better, I guess.
It just feels nice, like, being supported. I don't know. I just, like...
I would think that'd be the point of this gig. I don't know.
Yeah, it's, it was a weird... It was my first time doing a film fest, any film festivals. Like, even as an actor, like, I've done so many short films where they're like, we're submitting to film festivals. And that's part of the pay, is that... You're going to get food, and you're going to get credit, and you're going to get a copy of the film, and we're submitting to film festivals.
So they pretend that the film festival fees, we would pay you if we didn't have to pay film festival fees?
Yeah, but then it never goes to film festivals. So this was my first time doing any film festivals. So it was a weird year, obviously, to do that for the first time. But, you know, at the same time... Yeah, it was just...
Yeah, well, there are slight benefits. Like you said, I think we talked about it earlier, being able to see more.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you, I think it was the timing of it, because you were in Film Invasion LA, where the final deadline for submissions was March 15th, and the world locked down on, like, March 12th, I think.
Yeah.
Or it started to. And we were thinking, oh, by June we'll be back, and, like, it'll...
Right! Yeah.
So the fact that we went online... So fresh, I think that was when a lot of festivals were just taking everyone's fees and then saying, we're not doing any screenings, here's what the awards are, and like nothing happened, which was, I thought, kind of unethical. So we did the online festival and just kind of opened it up, right? Anyone could watch for free if they wanted.
Yeah.
And we had, I think it was over 8,000 unique viewers came in and watched that.
Really?
Yeah. So
wow. I think, that's cool.
Yeah. I mean, we couldn't get 8,000 people into our usual.
No.
You know, we have to be there for 2 months to get 8,000 in and out of the theater. So, you know, of course, a year later, we didn't have the same flood of enthusiasm. But this was, you know, everyone was locked in at home, so people watched, I guess.
Right.
That was really cool. I couldn't believe how many people actually came in.
Well, it was almost, it was like, at least from, you know, the participants' perspective, it almost, like, meant more. Because like, I remember Film Invasion. It was, like, the first time that you had to do this. And I was just like, I can't believe, like, he is going to such great lengths to make sure that we have this opportunity still. Like, that meant so much. And same with lady filmmakers. I was like, wow. It was just, it was really meaningful that, like, you know, those two festivals, like, went to such great lengths to do their best to give us a comparable experience. And again, it was really lovely to get to talk to everyone on, for the online mixers, too. Yeah. Because, I mean, speaking for myself, I'm a pretty introverted person. I'm really good at talking to people one-on-one. I'm terrible in crowds. And so, like, the mixers, like, when I did the festival that screened at the Chinese Theater, the mixer there, I was just, like, I was afraid to talk to anyone. So having it just on Zoom, it felt easier for me to talk to the other filmmakers and jump into the conversation.
It was, and I think everyone was gracious. Everyone really, it felt like everyone took turns. Everyone made sure that they inquired about each other's films. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really lovely.
It was great.
It was.
Yeah.
A year later, Film Invasion 2021, like, no one came to the Zoom mixers.
Oh, no!
I think it had been like over a year of Zoom at that point. I think there was Zoom burnout.
Oh, yeah.
So it was just the people from Europe and New York were showing up, and a few. But it was like, I think there was like 30 plus people at those mixers in 2020.
There was a good amount there.
The streams full of faces.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel Zoom burnout is a thing. Like, I started out like, oh, I'm going to Zoom with all my friends and blah, blah, blah. And that was great for the first month. And then there's a point where your face just, like, goes dead. And you're just like, I can't smile and interact with the screen anymore.
For sure. For sure. Yeah, we gave up on it early.
Oh.
I just wanted people in my backyard. That's all. I just kept inviting friends to the backyard to sit
so,
like,
great.
6-10 feet apart outside, no mask. Because, I mean, if you're far enough apart and there's a light breeze, come on, you're not going to get sick.
Yeah.
I believe, whatever. I stayed healthy for 18 months. Didn't even get a cold for 18 months, so.
Woo-hoo!
Knock on plastic.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's, I mean, that's technically CDC guidelines, too. Is that 6 feet apart in open air, you're okay. And now, there are vaccines, so even safer to be in the backyard 6 feet apart.
For sure. All right. Well, we talked about Film Invasion at the end there, so let me do the closing statements.
Awesome.
There's the little wrap-up, which is, of course, again, you should watch Rosalie Ospaugh's film, The Hostess, in Discover Indie Film, the TV series. She's in season 4, episode 6. Right now, you can watch that on Amazon Prime Video, but I'm actually working on other things. We'll see. Well, I'll tell you a secret after this.
Ooh.
And if you want to learn more, it's discoverindiefilm.com is the website with all the podcasts and then all the TV episodes. And on social media, it's at DIFWINS, W-I-N-S. And Rosalie's film was at Film Invasion Los Angeles, and that happens every June. And that's filminvasionla.com. And on social media, it's at Film Invasion LA. And the Sherman Oaks Film Festival is every November, and that's ShermanOaksFF.com or Sherman Oaks, or it's at Sherman Oaks FF on social media. And then it's up to you. Do you want to share a social media handle or anything you want?
Oh, sure. I should say, I think it's both of them are rated like one of the top film festivals on Film Freeway.
Yeah,
they have.
Sherman Oaks is always in the top 100.
Yeah.
Thank you for mentioning that.
Uh-huh.
And Film Invasion goes in for a couple months and out and in and out, so.
I think the latest is that it was.
Was it
in though, yeah.
I try not to get too emotionally invested in it because. I don't know. We can't control it. I don't know what the. I asked him, like, how come one festival with like 60 5-star reviews and the other has 52 5-star reviews? I don't know what's going on.
Oh, interesting. I wonder what the threshold is.
I don't know.
But yeah, it's you know, yeah, the top 100.
Is that what drew you to submit?
No, okay. I just read the description of it. That was literally it. I read the, like, on the page it describes the film festival, and I was like, this one sounds amazing. It was one of the ones that I was like, I submitted to quite a lot, and I submitted to them all in, like, February without any idea we were going to be in a pandemic. I'm thinking, I'm going to go to all these festivals. Well, not all of them. I was like, I hope I get into 5. That would be, like, the sweetest thing ever. But I was like, I'm going to go to hopefully 5. But, yeah, Film Evasion was one of the ones I was like, I really, really hope I get into this one because I just really liked the description provided.
Oh, cool.
And there were, you know, good reviews on it, so.
That's a pleasure to know.
Yeah, filmmakers should submit to this festival. It's a great experience.
It's fun. It's fun. And, you know, next June, use your free pass. Come watch films.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Alumni always... I don't know if I should say that. Alumni always get to. If alumni want to come, I'm like, of course.
Ah, yay!
You don't have to pay. You contributed. You know, you've submitted films. That's supportive. You know.
Yeah. My social media handles are just my name.
Oh, yeah. You are blessed with a rare name.
I have a weird. I don't think I haven't found another person. I've Googled myself, not for like to see like, ooh, what am I doing? Like. Psh.
Her name, Rosalie Alspa, is actually Rosalie Alspach.
Yes. Yes.
So the ignorant would say Alspach or Alspach.
I get Alspach a lot.
Really?
Yeah, it's all spa. And I had a teacher once point out, it's like, let's all go to the spa. but yeah, all my social media handles are just that.